Welcome to Labor Radio. I am Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Elliot Gilland.
Thank you for joining us. Just before we jump into our show, the main content of our show tonight, we'd just like to give a special thanks and shout out to the Labor Radio Podcast Network for hosting podcasted versions of our show each month. So be sure to check that out at laborradionetwork.org. And yeah, you can find old episodes of this show as well as many other labor-focused and worker-focused podcasts from around the country. So yeah, check out laborradionetwork.org. For this week's episode, we are going to be talking about the United States Postal Service and basically the direct attack that is being waged against them by the Trump administration and by congressional Republicans. As you are no doubt aware, you know, anyone who exists in this country and has been paying attention to the news, even tangentially, the Postal Service is a main focus of news right now, both because they are under attack by the Republican Party, but also because they could play a major role in the upcoming election in November, the general election. Obviously, we are in the middle of a pandemic, and mail-in voting is a big topic that people are trying to make sure is the Postal Service is available to handle in November. And yeah, so we're going to discuss basically what is happening with both, you know, mail-in voting, but also what the Trump administration is doing to try and prevent the Postal Service from being able to handle the influx of ballots in November.
Yeah, and kind of even more so, too, just for us on Labor Radio, you know, why the USPS is so important, not just for the voting aspects, but also because obviously it has a union and also it supplies mail and different things for, you know, other people, like other working class people. So not only is the election, you know, possibly affected, but, you know, in a lot of different areas, you know, the USPS is like a literal lifeline for lots of Americans, right?
Absolutely.
It's also super crucial for lots of small businesses for reasons that we'll get into later in the show.
Yeah.
And like you mentioned, it's super essential for rural Americans.
Yeah.
You know, not only is the USPS like going to deliver all the absentee and the voting by mail in the general in November. But, you know, it also delivers things like prescriptions and, you know, other like really key things to areas that might not be as profitable for, a more traditional for-profit, you know, delivery company like a FedEx or something like that. So,
and yeah, interestingly enough, the post office, you know, not only do they, you know, provide exactly what Elliot was just saying, but they also are a source of banking for certain, you know, rural communities. They allow you to cash treasury checks and to issue money orders for people who do not have access to regular banking services. Be that because they live in an area without one or because they don't have a bank account, things like that.
Yeah.
So the post office is an essential service that not only is an essential service because of the things we mentioned, but also because it is laid out specifically in the Constitution. And yeah, the right for Congress to establish post offices is written into Article 1, Section 8, Clause 7 of the Constitution. So this is a fundamental, essential right of all Americans to have the post office.
Yeah, and honestly, they used to do a lot more.
Right.
In terms of kind of like what you mentioned, like the postal banking.
Yeah.
So, you know, back in like the 60s and the earlier parts of the 20th century, there was a lot more going on there, which I think we'll touch on. But, you know, to kind of talk about like the current state of things and then maybe go into, you know, how exactly we got here.
Yeah.
You know, but basically, you know, pre-pandemic, the USPS was under huge threat, mostly just from a basically a 2006 law called the Postal Accountability Enhancement Act, which we will touch on. You know, basically the pandemic has threatened basically the very survival of the USPS, and the National Association of Letter Carriers, or the union, you know, obviously that supplies the workforce for the USPS. It's headed up by, a man named, Frederick Rowland. And, you know, he basically has come out multiple times and talked about the dire need of additional funding, for the Postal Service, and basically alluded to the fact that, you know, pre-pandemic, there were obviously a ton of problems, but basically skyrocketing kind of package volume in May from the coronavirus actually has helped kind of prop up some of the really bad financial situations that the USPS is in.
Right.
And the reason that they're in this state is, you know, obviously going back to that 2006 law that we mentioned earlier, the Postal Accountability Enhancement Act. And basically what that act did was require the USPS to prepay healthcare benefits for retirees on a 50-year schedule. So basically do it hugely in advance. So, you know, on this show, obviously we're big fans of healthcare benefits for workers. Yep. but in this case, this 2006 law, it was done in a way to kind of handicap it.
Yep.
The USPS is obviously in a unique situation in that it, while it is a federal institution, it's supposed to be profitable.
Right.
In
it that does it's run a profit. Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't. It's not paid for by taxpayers. Well, and you know, previously,
right.
before, you know, now it, as it's run up debt,
yeah,
things are different. But basically, over the first 10 years after that 2006 bill, so from 2007 to 2017. It basically, the USPS was required to pay $5 billion a year into this healthcare benefit plan that's, you know, forecasting 50 years out.
Right. And so, like, not only does that mean that they're putting money towards the retirement benefits for people who are, you know, just starting out and for people who are, you know, going to be soon to be future workers, but because of the timeline of that, it requires that they put money into post-retirement funds for people who are not even born yet, for future employees who have not even been born at the time they're funding this. So there is no other federal agency or private corporation that is at
that
all
far
required.
Out.
Yeah, that is any requirement like this. So, of course, you know, if you were to put this requirement on any major corporation, there's no way that they'd be able to run at a profit unless they're like, you know, an oil company or something like that.
Yep.
And the Institute for Policy Studies actually found in a 2019 study that had the retiree health healthcare mandate been removed, you know, and not been put in place in 2006, the post office would have continued operating and reporting profits since 2013 all the way through 2019.
Yeah.
So, you know, that just shows that this was essentially a fake crisis manufactured by the Republicans.
Yeah.
You know, it's not officially.
And honestly, it was pretty. It was kind of supported by both sides at the time.
It's true.
So it's kind of disappointing. And, you know, the other really big thing that the law did was it also put caps on things like first class mail and other kind of higher revenue generating activities of the post office. So basically they were kind of, you know, hit with these really gigantic fixed costs. And then they were given ceilings on how much revenue they could generate on, you know, some of the main things that you would expect a post office to do.
Right.
And that's why over the last, you know, 15 years, something like that, you've seen the post office start to develop kind of some strange, when you actually think about it, either marketing campaigns or other things like that, like selling clothes with Urban Outfitters.
Right.
Or, you know, trying to get kids into buying stamps because they can't increase the prices of anything. So the only thing they can do is sell different offerings or increase volume.
Yeah, like so, commercialize in other ways.
Yeah. And so basically in 2006, after the law passed, the USPS went from a $900 million profit, like you mentioned, to basically a $3.8 billion loss in 2009. And like you said, that is basically almost all attributed to this one law.
Right.
And so that's kind of how we ended up in this situation from just a regular, you know, government institution to this underwater kind of backwards from the outside, backwards, you know, functioning organization.
Like an organization that is designed to be self-sufficient completely underwater.
Yeah.
And, you know, like you said, you know, it was supported bipartisanly in 2006. But, you know, looking at it from, you know, the 3,000 foot view, it's pretty clear that this was put in place. I mean, because there's no real benefit that you can understand from why they would require this other than if you're thinking about the fact that the ultimate goal is to privatize.
Well, it's just an easy win, right? Like you can dunk on some government institution. You can talk about small government kind of rhetoric. You can hit on a bunch of talking points, and it's just like a slam dunk on an institution that's really being forced into these kind of poor,
poor
revenue generating model.
Yeah, and ultimately, I mean, because that's the classic conservative move: is to take over, get elected, take over a government agency. Break it in some way like this, do something to make it non-functioning, and then turn around and point and see, like, look, it doesn't work. We have to privatize this because look at this government bureaucracy. It doesn't work. And it's like, well, no, you took over and you broke it. It was functioning perfectly. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it can be argued for people, you know, who voted for it on the Democrat and Republican side why they were doing that. But 10 years out, you know, or, you know, 14 years away from that initial 2006 vote, it's pretty clear now that the current Republican Party they're hell-bent on privatizing the Postal Service, and this is kind of the this has been the impetus for why they're allowed or why they're able to argue for that.
And you know, we touched on it, but again, you know, like some of these other things, healthcare, education, some of these fundamental things that, you know, in the case of the USPS, you know, it sounds silly, but for most people, but can be a literal lifeline, right? Delivering insanely important things to areas that maybe a for-profit company would choose not to.
Right, or make it exorbitantly expensive.
Yeah, and so, you know, one of the things that the post office does is right now the post office contracts with a lot of these other companies like Amazon to help do deliveries.
Yep.
And because of the low cost, which the post office, even if you allowed it to increase the caps, would most likely do, keep things lower because, you know, they're not a private organization.
Right.
This allows a lot of these costs to not get put on the consumer, right? So a lot of the things that allows Amazon to do what they're doing is, you know, helping the post office is helping them to deliver to certain areas.
Right.
They're keeping the efficiency of whatever kind of, you know, model, which we've seen coronavirus affect hugely, these kind of just-in-time manufacturing models of like an iPhone or kind of these really tight supply chains. The USPS is a really big part of that, and it's plugged in deeply to a ton of these organizations. And so to kind of to allow it to be this huge cog and then also to bash it is kind of an interesting choice.
It's like some interesting cognitive dissonance. And exactly like you said, I mean, you know, it's a pretty standard corporate move to you know, internalize the profit and externalize the cost, you know, onto the public.
Yeah.
And the USPS has been sort of the way that a lot of these companies, these logistic companies, have been able to do that for a while now.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, just getting into what exactly is happening right now around, you know, the current attack on the Postal Service and, you know, how that ties into the November election. I mean, basically what's happening is that the Trump administration, I mean, back a couple of years ago in 2018, the Republicans, congressional Republicans, in conjunction with the Trump administration, put forward a bill, a proposal to privatize the post office. Then, you know, obviously, then we had the midterm elections, and that changed the tide, so Congress wouldn't vote for it. But, like, you know, we're talking at least 2 years out. This has been the plan. This has been the goal, and you know, for many years prior to that. And now you have, so not only is the goal to privatize a lot of these public organizations, these public agencies, the services of them, but on top of that, you also have the looming specter for Trump and the Republicans of losing, potentially losing the election because mail-in voting will allow for more robust turnout, voter turnout in November because we are looking at a, you know, a pandemic voting situation around the country where, you know, if you open up polling places in, you know, cities and require people to stand in line and gather together in order to vote and touch the same machines, that is, you know, going to lessen turnout. And so if you allow for people to vote, you know, essentially absentee, which it's slightly different, mail-in versus absentee, although it's functionally
it's basically
the same thing. If you allow them to do that, then more people are going to be inclined to vote from the comfort of their home and mail it in or turn it into a Dropbox somewhere.
And obviously, we're broadcasting from a state who holds their elections entirely by mail and has basically had almost no problems doing so.
Successfully for a long time.
Yeah. I think it seems like the Trump administration is kind of factoring in some of these studies that you'll see that a majority of mail-in voters or absentee voters in other states outside of Oregon are mostly Democrat.
Right.
And so I think they're kind of translating that into a strategy of if we can, you know, if, and also Democrats are more likely to not, you know, go to a, you know, a polling station based on based on taking the coronavirus seriously.
Exactly.
And again, this is just some polling data that we've seen, but basically the gist of it is that Democrats are more likely to be taking the coronavirus seriously in states across the United States. So theoretically, I think they're working on these assumptions. But, you know, with the state of the virus and, you know, us looking at this second wave, kind of being in the middle of the second wave, you know, seemingly both sides are going to be voting by mail. So really what this is this is just kind of, this is like kind of targeting classes of people, right? People who aren't going to be able to kind of take advantage of this stuff. And, you know, they kind of have admitted it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a means of basically like it putting in place a poll tax or like voter, you know, active voter suppression of leftist or left wing voters.
And Trump really doesn't need Congress to kind of handicap the USPS and to the point where they couldn't even close, right? You know, like we said earlier, the president of the National Association of Letter Carriers says the pandemic literally is threatening the survival of the USPS.
Right.
And this all started in 2016 when Trump took office. He basically appointed Louis DeJoy, who is a was a basically very large donor to yeah. his campaign and as the Postmaster General.
Exactly.
And basically, Louis DeJoy from the inside is leading what he would call a cost-cutting effort and a reorganization yeah. of the institution. But really, he is instituting policies that, you know, are leading to delays in mail and basically a buildup, you know, of kind of a buildup of mail and packages so that things can't be delivered.
Yes.
So, you know, to kind of take us back to the labor part of this, one of the first things that Louis DeJoy did as Postmaster General was basically disallow overtime.
Mm-hmm.
And so by doing that, not only is he kind of cutting into the ability of, you know, individual letter carriers to get their routes done, he is kind of over time leading to this buildup of non-delivery of mail. And then also, to be honest, like taking away potential overtime opportunities for, you know, workers who are in the union.
Yeah. And I mean, that's, you know, there are postal workers out there reporting that they're seeing piles of mail piling up in places in their distribution centers they'd never seen before. And, you know, general letter carriers, for the most part, they have, you know, an allotment of mail to deliver each day. And if, you know, as they get to the end of their appointed shift and they still have more letters to deliver, most of the time it was approved overtime. They could continue making their rounds, mm-hmm. getting all the mail delivered so that by the next day it was a new fresh batch of mail
exactly.
that could be delivered. But now, because they are cut off directly at the end of their shift, and if they have more mail to deliver, it has to go back and then be waited on to be delivered the next day.
Yeah.
That just creates a backlog that slows down the delivery of mail and the delivery of essential services for people, and also hurts the workers who are working for the Postal Service, and it hurts the working people who need that service.
Exactly.
So another thing that DeJoy has done is he basically restructured the Postal Service entirely around the Postmaster General, which is his position.
Yeah.
A restructuring that took it from being allowing individual local post offices to run, you know, themselves for the most part, or not decentralized, but rather like
yeah.
localized, to having it be centralized around an individual who, you know, the Postmaster General's role was never to be the dictator of the post office,
yeah.
but that is sort of what they've created for themselves. And so along with that, you know, so once taking that power, DeJoy then also has begun not only removing physical mailboxes, you know, corner mailboxes, the big blue ones you see from around the country, but also deactivating mail sorting machines that, you know, will be necessary for sorting the influx of ballots that will be
yeah.
coming. And so this is something that was not announced to employees, and basically the decision was done in an opaque manner, and to the point that, like, local postal workers and postal worker union members are unable to explain why they're doing that. In fact, the Iowa Postal Workers Union president, Kimberly Carroll, told Vice News about a month ago that Carroll said, I'm not sure you're going to find an answer for why the machines are being removed, and it doesn't make sense. We can't figure it out either.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, that's just the basic place that we're starting from. For postal workers, don't understand why these machines are being removed. But if you take a step back and understand what these machines do, the sorting machines, they're delivery barcode sorters, and they basically sort letters and postcard-sized mail. So, you know, ballots. They don't go through things like magazines and packages.
Yeah.
So it slows down the sorting and the process for sorting small things, including ballots.
Yep.
And what it, you know, so by removing these things, the capacity, it reduces the capacity to sort mail quickly. And so, you know, it doesn't mean that mail cannot be sorted, but what it does is that it basically slows down the amount of time. So if you have a short window of time in which a lot of mail, letter-sized mail, has to be processed, without these machines, that will be, it will be impossible to deal with, you know, if ballots are turned in the week of or on election day, there won't be the worker power or the machine power to get them all sorted in time for election results.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's what the Postal Service is doing. And if you put that in conjunction with what the rhetoric coming out of the Trump administration, which has been, well, it could take, you know, he recently said, like, it could take weeks or months or even years to get the results of these elections, and because of mail-in, and you may never know. And so it's like he's basically setting up a scenario. The Trump administration is behind the scenes breaking our ability to sort this mail properly and get ballots counted quickly.
Yeah.
And then going out there and saying, hey, you know, if you have mail-in voting, this is what's going to happen. And creating, then behind the scenes creating the conditions for which that would happen, which they wouldn't otherwise. Which is, you know, a pretty classic Trumpian move of projecting onto other people or other situations things that you are in fact doing yourself. So, you know, that's the 30,000 foot view of what's happening, is that the Trump administration, you know, just like Trump has done with the EPA and other federal agencies, putting in place someone to oversee that agency that is basically hell-bent on making sure it does not work, or it works for the purposes of the administration, and then going out there and arguing once it does not work, hey, look, it doesn't work. You know, we can't trust this organization or the service provided because, look, it's not working, because they then had someone break that. So, you know, that's sort of what's happening on the ground in terms of why, you know, what the Postmaster General is doing to make it so that we cannot have successful mail-in voting.
Yeah. Really, it's led to last week the National Association of Letter Carriers, the NACL, to endorse Joe Biden, which is, you know, a pretty big deal. And Rolando, obviously the president of the union, basically came out and said that the postal worker decision to endorse Biden is partly informed by what we have seen from the current administration with regards to the post office, right?
Yeah.
Last week as well, Trump basically came out and said, kind of mask off his reasons for it.
Yep.
And I think, you know, this is being picked up by a lot of new news organizations and obviously this radio station, because it's kind of one of the most kind of fascist things that we have seen.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of, we are literally trying to restrict people from voting, you know, we being the Trump administration, to try to steal this election.
Yeah.
And I think this is why it is a really big deal for everyone out there, even if you're not in Oregon, and if you are in Oregon as well, to make sure that you get out and vote.
Absolutely.
Trump has still not accepted the popular vote loss from 2016.
Right.
And he is going to use every single excuse to call fraud, you know, on this election in November if he loses. And, you know, he's kind of being successful in it. A new study came out that basically showed that 2/3 of Republicans are worried that this election won't be fair.
Right.
When clearly it's going to be run the same as every other election, in that it is, we are going to use the Electoral College to find someone to run this country. And I think it's really important that we try to run up the score against Trump, because unless the victory is devastating, he is not going to accept it. He is going to try to fight it. You'll probably see lawsuits start to fly around. And so for us and everyone kind of out there, it's really important that you vote in November.
Yeah, and really, I mean, you know, he's already been positioning himself and preparing his supporters, you know, rhetorically, for not accepting the results of the election. And even if it is a resounding defeat of him, he will still likely not accept it. His supporters will likely not accept it. But, like, basically what they are doing to the post office and the way that they're undermining the service provided by the post office is perfectly in line with the rhetoric that has been coming out about, and basically the preparations being made by the Trump administration around not accepting the election results and believing that there is fraudulent voting happening.
Yeah.
And if there is any question around the legitimacy of, you know, how quickly the post office can turn around the mail-in voting and all that stuff, if there's any conflict there, if there's any delay, they will point to that as a reason why there is voter fraud happening and why you should not accept the results of the election.
And that's why I think it's so important that Biden basically got this endorsement from the NACL.
Yeah.
Right? It's 300,000 strong active and retired postal workers who are clearly seeing this administration basically try to buy and take advantage of the American people in the next 3 months here, as we're looking, you know, to the general election. So, I mean, it's a really big deal. Clearly, you know, they have a vote of confidence in Biden. And also, in a statement, they also praised the Kamala Harris choice last week. So I think people are slowly becoming aware of this problem. And it's really important to note as well that, you know, the Postal Service itself, you know, outside of Louis DeJoy, came out and stated that with enough money, they do not see any problems dealing with the election at all.
Yeah.
And so, you know, for them, they've been dealing with huge amounts of packages for a long time, especially as, you know, like we talked about earlier, as they took on a lot of contract work from things like Amazon.
Right.
You know, getting, you know, working our way through this pandemic and getting a mail-in voting system is not actually something that is out of bounds.
Yeah. And, you know, so, yeah, if you're just joining us, we are discussing the controversy around mail-in voting for November. And basically what the Trump administration has done to attack postal workers and the post office, the postal service itself.
Mm-hmm.
And so the new Postmaster General, Louis DeJoy, who was appointed by the Trump administration, you know, for his part in all of this, he himself, there's a lot of questions around corruption and his conflicts of interest. He was the former CEO of New Breed Logistics, which is a USPS contractor, and he's heavily invested in that company as well as a number of other competitors and contractors to the USPS, including Amazon. So, you know, there is a series of conflicts of interest where he is, in fact, he could benefit from the reduction of the Postal Service functioning. You know, so if they privatize or if they reduce their ability to serve, he would be directly financially benefited from that, to the point where Senator Elizabeth Warren has even called out a need to investigate his conflicts of interest. She tweeted on August 13th that the Postmaster General Louis DeJoy's investments in USPS competitors were already deeply problematic, but his purchase of Amazon stocks after his appointment is inexcusable. The Office of Inspector General of the United States Postal Service must investigate this corruption.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we're basically at a point where that, you know, so that the individual in charge of the Postal Service is himself corrupt and questionably
and doesn't believe in the institution that he's running, right? I think this is a really big key to all these things, right? Like you know, the Secretary of Education, all of these people that Trump has appointed in most cases don't believe in the very institutions that they're running. And so, you know, you can't point to them as, you know, kind of malfunctioning or underperforming in a scenario where the leader of all these things doesn't believe in what they do.
Exactly. You know, so it's pretty much par for the course for the Trump administration, as you were just saying.
Yeah.
But this is one of the more egregious sort of steps towards authoritarianism where, you know, the Postal Service is as we've laid out, an essential service for this country. And of course, then the elections, you know, the free and fair elections and the peaceful transference of power are all very much part of our constitutional democracy. And so the attacks, the tandem attacks of on the post office and, you know, not accepting the vote, the election results are just his newest step towards basically trying to grab authoritarian power. And so, yeah, we are now reaching the end of our show. So just quickly before we sign off here, there are some steps, actions that you can take to prevent this authoritarian takeover of the post office. Congress, so you can reach out to your lawmaker and urge them to pass H.R. 2382, which is the USPS Fairness Act, which would repeal the pre-funding mandate for USPS and allow them to future pay-as-you-go costs. So yeah, ask, you know, lawmakers to deal with that. You can go to APWU or AmericanPostalWorkersUnion.org/savepostoffice and sign the petition there and contact your lawmakers, asking them to save the post office. You can also contact your lawmakers. You know, the Postmaster General is an impeachable position, so you can reach out to your lawmakers and demand that they impeach Louis DeJoy because of his conflicts of interest, his corruption, as well as his blatant corrupt restructuring of the agency. And finally, you know, make sure you vote. And in states where mail-in is not the norm, mail-in ballots do not necessarily have to be mailed in. They can be dropped off at collection sites. So contact your local elections office to figure out where that can be done.
And sign up early.
Exactly.
You can sign up now to start getting your mail-in ballots. Do it now early so that things don't back up, you know, as much as they could. And also buy stamps.
Yes.
Buy a page of stamps. Support the post office. And also the post office supports the people. So if you haven't, please fill out the census.
Absolutely.
You know, making sure that the government knows how many people and where they are. It's really important. So, again,
That's 100%. Yeah. Buy stamps, mail letters, vote early and often.
Yep.
That is all the time we have. Thank you so much for listening to Labor Radio. I am Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Ellie Gilland.
Have a great day.